And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nueva Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario.
Yeah. Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affel drives forward. Affel scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by our dear friends at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade. Hit it up. And first off, we've got, you know, our names here, Bart Logan with you. We've also got Patrick Murphy joining us. Smurf, how you doing, sir?
I'm Dandy.
Dandy. Damn good to hear. Alex Stanek with us as well, fresh off of a big riveting interview with the Austin American Statesman's Chris Bills that he's going to spill all the juicy details for us on during this podcast. Is that correct?
No.
Oh, damn. And Sam Fahmy. Sam, how you doing, sir?
I'm alive and well.
Well, we promise we will give you at least something to think about over the next hour plus. It might not be good thoughts. It might be intelligent or thoughtful commentary, but we will blabber and we'll talk about some crew victory. Current crew undefeated streak of, I believe, 6 games. And that latest victory coming courtesy of one Lawless Abubakar. So we'll recap that win over New England in Foxborough last weekend. Take a look elsewhere around the MLS and try to get an idea of where we think crew stand here as we're getting around one third of the way through the season, up among the top seeds in the Eastern Conference. And then we'll also preview the action coming up this week. SKC, the top team in the West, Columbus will be traveling to Kansas City to take them on this weekend. And it's the start of a pretty big stretch against some, you know, higher regarded teams in MLS. So a stretch that could say a lot about this team, and they'll want to start it off on a good note against SKC. But first, we will head back to New England, Foxborough, Gillette Stadium, home of the Patriots and Tom Brady, and also the New England Revolution, and dozens of Revolution fans who are on hand to watch a game that for a while looked like it was going to end in a scoreless draw, until Lawless Abubakar, 85 minutes into the game, off a corner from Frederico Higuain, managed to steal 3 points for the crew. Patrick Murphy, is that a fair summation, or was this game, you know, maybe a little bit more dominant of a performance for Columbus?
No, I think you summed it up pretty well. I mean, you know, this is a team that has shown this year that it can win games or get results in different ways. And we talked about it, you know, a couple weeks ago after the Seattle game and the Philly game, where, you know, you get a 0-0 draw out in Seattle, you get a 1-0 win that wasn't the prettiest against Philly, and now you go to New England, you're playing on turf, you know, it's cold and rainy and whatnot, and, you know, it wasn't, you know, the most dominant, but, you know, crew outshot New England 16-3, had 58% of the possession. So, you know, doing the things that they normally do. Just, you know, offensively, I think right now this team doesn't have the same firepower it once did. You know, I think missing Pedro Santos, now you're trying to install a new winger. This week it was Luis Argudo, with Mike Grella not going from the start, largely due to the game being on turf, mm-hmm. and them being pretty precautious with him. But, you know, the fact that you get 80-plus minutes in, everyone's starting to think, okay, you get a road tie, this is a good thing, and then you get a goal. This team is figuring out ways to get results one way or the other. The Lawless header was a thunderous strike from him. Colin did our goal breakdown on the website today, which I recommend reading because he kind of details how they set that play up. But you know, this team can score in different ways. It's getting goals from a number of different people. You know, I obviously Jossie's artist has a chunk of them, but people are contributing offensively in a variety of ways, and you know, they're not giving up goals. Four straight shutouts, which you don't give up goals, you're it's going to be hard for you to lose games, I think.
Eight goals surrendered by, I'm sorry, 10. Goal differential is eight, but 10 goals surrendered on the season. They're averaging less than a goal surrendered a game. And of course, that's buoyed by, you mentioned, this four game scoreless streak and clean sheet streak. Zach Steffen probably challenged more in this game than he has been in a handful of his previous games combined, but still looked pretty solid. And again, this back line led by Jonathan Mensah, who was on the MLS Team of the Week, although kind of surprisingly, given that Abubakar was the one that scored the decisive goal and also helped keep the clean sheet. But how much is Jonathan Mensah, you know, just really blossomed this season, it seems, and he's been that one stalwart, that one constant. We've seen Josh Williams get plugged in, we've seen Lalas Abubakar get plugged in there at that center back position, but it seems that Jonathan Mensah here in his second season is really earning that DP tag, although he doesn't have it anymore because they spent him down. But you know,
yeah, it's a good, you know, I in the beginning of the season I picked Jonathan Mensah to be my breakout player of the year or comeback player of the year, whatever you think, for this team. And you started to see it the last, like, 10 games or so and in the playoffs last year. And now you're starting to see it come basically into full fruition. And it doesn't matter who's playing next to him, whether it's Hector Jimenez playing for Harry or whether it's Lalas Abubakar or whether it's Josh Williams or whether it's – it doesn't matter who it is that's playing next to him. He has shown – more poise and more confidence than he ever showed in the beginning, like for most of the year last year until the end. I think it's tough for me to fully appreciate the shutout streaks and the, you know, small percentage of goals that have been scored or the small percentage of shots that have been taken on Zach Steffen, which he's also done his part admirably. But I still see some stuff back there that makes my heart skip a beat every once in a while when they make a long unnecessary pass or try to really force a pass through two opposing midfielders or forwards that are coming at you. So I'm hoping that this continues. I'm hoping that the streak continues. I am even more so hoping that they figure out that they don't need to force things, and it's going to come back to bite them. Don't be surprised if it comes back to bite them at some point during the year, because that's just how that system is. But I like how they're playing right now. I'd like to see more of the shutouts. And I want to see, like, the missing piece now is Mensah scoring goals. And I think that's going to come up pretty soon.
I think it's just interesting given, you know, how much we've talked about this team's defensive issues over the last few years, how quickly, and they were better defensively the as they made the run last year and into the playoffs, but you know, just how this team's turned into, you know, a defensive team. You know, it's not as if, you know, they've changed a ton tactically. You know, I do think that they are more secure. They're not throwing as many numbers forward as maybe they did early on in Berhalter's tenure. I also think that, you know, the players have gotten better. They've found players that, you know, while they can also attack, are still, you know, secure defensively and have bought in to defending as 11 guys. You know, you look at a Milton Valenzuela who has proven that he can be an offensive threat, but definitely has made his impact defensively, I'd say. And then guys like Will Trapp and Artur, now in their second year playing together, breaking up counters, stuff like that. You know, you get the defensive effort from the wingers. You know, it's just interesting that, you know, Greg Berhalter, who came in, you know, preaching this offensive style and whatnot, and I think they certainly still want to do that, but, you know, if you'd asked me at the beginning of the year, if you'd asked me last year about four consecutive shutouts, excuse me, I would have laughed. You know, this just didn't seem like a team that could do something like that. And, you know, I think it's a positive sign. Even if the goals aren't coming, I do think that they will start to come. And, you know, if they don't, I believe that they'll make a move come the summer transfer window. But, you know, if, like I said before, if you're not allowing goals, you can do some very good things in this league. And, you know, as the season progresses, if they can stay a solid defensive team, I think that spells positivity going forward.
You talk about, you know, the shutout streak, the four straight, and I mean, just 10 goals in the season. That wasn't uncharacteristic to see just in four games under a Berhalter coach team in the past. This is a team that is always, and it's, I think, another indicative thing about Greg Berhalter is the tactical adjustments. It's a thing that we, you know, harped on and we started to see more of last year. But you look at this game and you talk about, Sam, you were touching on, you know, the turnovers and the way this system's designed, how the balls are played out of the back by Stefan, those kind of short passes to the Will Traps and Jonathan Mensahs or Lawless Abubakars, and how that can kind of lead to some danger if anything's misplayed. Well, against the New England team that had that, you know, just three in the back formation, was pushing and pressing against them, we saw an adjustment from Greg Berhalter in the game plan and a lot of long balls played by Zach Steffen. You know, probably punted, you know, more balls in this game than he has in the past five or so games playing them out long. Interesting, Alex, to see those tactical adjustments and them paying off, importantly, for this team.
Yeah, and I think this was something that was touched on post-game as well by Friedel when he was asked about that. Yeah, they were not expecting that. I thought it was a good change to make, you know, keep teams a little bit on their toes. I do still think that the general tactics that we play, the general formation that we play, is something that Greg is going to really hesitate to drift too far away from. But that can be okay as long as you've got the right guys in there. In past seasons, I think, especially defensively, we really haven't had a core group of players that we can count on who were all kind of on the same page and try to prevent these defensive lapses from happening. It seems like we've got that this year. The system still, just in terms of the way it's set up, is kind of error-prone. If you make a small mistake, it immediately becomes a big mistake on defense. Just the way the players are positioned and things like that. You know, if one of your center backs slips or something along those lines, the other player is probably through on goal. So that's a problem, but it hasn't really bitten us yet this year. It could still bite us later on in the year. Mistakes are going to happen. I don't think people should panic about it. It's, you know, the cost of playing the system that we play. But very encouraging stuff so far. And yeah, I think we've got a good group this year. Hopefully everybody stays healthy. Every time we kind of check one of these turf games off without anybody having a knee injury or anything like that, it's always mm-hmm. a good thing. So positive stuff.
And you talk about how the system is kind of, you know, error prone, and those goals are going to come. I don't think, you know, anyone thinks that this team's a team that is going to average less than a goal per game surrendered over the course of the season. They're in the field right now of SKC, a team that they're playing this week, when it comes to, you know, defensive stalwartness. But it also, because it's an error-prone system that, you know, puts a lot of pressure on those center backs and Will Trapp and Zach Steffen, there's a really thin margin, especially when you're not producing offensively. And while Crew did get the goal, that was a manufactured goal from Lawless Abubakar there on the set piece. And otherwise, but for, you know, a good chance from Frederico Higuain that he skied, and Jonathan Mensah had another, I think, opportunity off a set piece. But it looked like, frankly, the majority of their good opportunities came off those set pieces. Not much in the run of play was given to them by New England. You get the 3 points, so you can't complain. But is this offensive, you know, just bit of stagnant offensive performance, something more to be concerned about. As you mentioned, Patrick, Pedro Santos is out. He's probably going to be out a bit longer than some people imagined at first. I'm hearing now close to, you know, it was supposed to be a couple weeks, now looking closer to a month. Then you're looking at three largely untested in MLS young rookie or young wingers, one rookie, Argudo, and then a guy coming back from a long-term debilitating injury in Mike Gorella, a vet. A lot of question marks still at the winger position then. And if we're not producing goals and they're not scoring, you could see these games going the other way very easily.
Sure, and especially as you take on better competition and you know, as we've talked about before, I think this kind of was the start of a ramping up and level with New England and moving forward here over the next five or six games. But yeah, I think you look at this team offensively and there are some reasons to ask some questions. You know, and they're questions that we were asking before the season. You lose a Justin Merrim, you lose an Ola Kamara, you've got to replace those guys. Obviously Giassi Zardes has come in and, you know, eight goals is very good to start the year. But you haven't really replaced what Justin Merrim gave you. And, you know, obviously he had a great first half of last season, didn't score a ton. Yeah, I think he had one regular season goal and one playoff goal kind of the second half of the year. But, you know, he was still somebody who you knew what you were going to get out of him offensively. He was going to challenge defenders and whatnot. You also lost to Kakuta Mane, who is a guy that whether, you know, he started, whether he came off the bench, he gave you a bit of a different look with his speed, with his dribbling ability. And so you're trying to fill that void with, as you mentioned, those young guys in Nico Hansen and Christian Martinez, Luis Argudo, who, you know, while I see talent there, I don't think it's necessarily going to be consistent, at least right now, because they're young. They're still learning this league. Obviously, Christian Martinez has been around a little longer than the other two, but still a young player. And, you know, you're going to have bumps in the road with them. And if you can't rely on Mike Grella and Pedro Santos week in and week out right now, then, you know, I think you will have some offensive inconsistencies. I think the good news is, like we said, the defense is playing well. So at the very least, you're hoping to get draws in certain games. But, you know, I guess I am a little concerned. But then I also look back to the game against Chicago last week where they created a number of opportunities and scored three goals. I don't think Chicago is a team you want to be using as the benchmark defensively, but you know this team does still have that potential. It's just a matter of putting it together week in and week out, and I think that's something that maybe, you know, the second half of the season as these guys really develop more chemistry, we'll start to see. I hope, at least for their sake.
When we look now, you know, at the entirety of it though, third of the way through the season, maybe a little bit more. And 24 points for Columbus in 13 games played, third in the Eastern Conference standings, trailing NYCFC, actually tied with NYCFC in points, but trailing them in points per game and goal differential. And then Atlanta United at the top with 25 points, both NYC and Atlanta a game in hand on Columbus. New York Red Bulls, who are 3 points behind the Crew, have three games in hand, so that's a team that could shoot their way back up. They're getting goals galore, courtesy of Bradley Wright Phillips, tied with Giassi Zardes for the top of the MLS Golden Boot standings. But nonetheless, you're looking at a team that they're getting their points, and I think a third of the way through the season, given all the tumult in the offseason, all the questions, you know, questions that some players on the roster didn't want to be around to answer, and so they asked for trades or to have to deal with, and I don't hold that against them. It's just the reality of it. And for Greg Berhalter to have this team virtually tied for second in the Eastern Conference and you know, tied for second in the Supporter Shield in the race right now, I think it speaks volumes to him and the program he's putting together. as well as, you know, what this team has done and the fortitude these guys have. I don't think any of us, you know, even the most black and gold with our most black and gold tinted glasses on, saw this team as a supporter's shield, you know, a team fighting for the supporter's shield this late into the game.
Well, I think a lot of times we get completely wrapped up in the whole how many games do other teams have in hand, versus where we are in the standings and whatsoever. You know what? This is one of those seasons where you have to take the team mantra of playing this one game at a time. If you look at going out and just getting a result every game that is positive, whether it's 1 point or 3 points, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is the most points this team has had under Berhalter after 13 games, right?
Correct.
I believe so.
Yeah.
So, I think it's by like 5 points or so.
Yeah. So don't worry about how many games other teams have in hand. Don't worry about where we are in the standings. This is a year to just put your head down, do your work, get the results, and the more you continue to get the results, the more it's not going to matter at the end of the year, because you've already gotten the results that you need. And whether other teams do well or falter on their way, it doesn't matter. You have gotten the results, you've done the work, it's going to be well beyond if they continue at this pace. And I don't think this pace is going to continue. I think we're going to have a lull where they're maybe not winning as many games, probably for about a 10-game stretch maybe, or a 5-game stretch. But the more you can minimize that lull that normally happens during the summer, the more you have a chance to, at the end of the year, to be in a better position for the playoffs, to be in a better position for, who knows? We could be talking, you know, with 5 games left or 10 games left or whatever, and everybody's evened up on games since there is no World Cup to worry about. you know, we could be looking at a possible supporter's shield. We could be looking at, you know, something of that caliber. But if you continue to worry as fans, if we continue to worry about how many games other teams have in hand, this is never going to be a good discussion, unless we're like losing left and right.
Do you think, what does this say for Greg Berhalter as a manager, that he's been able to have this team focused and kind of eliminate or at least limit the distractions off the field, which are plentiful? And it's not like, you know, it's not like they're not getting questions about it. I think it says a lot.
I mean, we've seen some Warzea teams win despite Warzea. In this case, we're not talking about spiting Greg. I think this team is winning to spite ownership, maybe unintentionally, or maybe intentionally. They're just not saying it out loud. But I kind of like this attitude of this team and how they're going out, and you know, they're playing their hearts out, and they're playing for the fans. And I appreciate that, and that's my 2 cents. Alex?
Yeah, I think Greg's channeling any sort of stress and any sort of anxiety related to the move into, you know, positive action on the field. I can't remember if he said it or if somebody else said it, but, I mean, the players can't control anything except what happens on the pitch. So might as well give everything, try to get fans pumped up about things. I think hopefully we'll have some good news before too much longer here, and then maybe that'll boost the team even more. But you know, this season is definitely a weird one, not only for the fans but also for a lot of our players, including our captain, you know, who's a local guy. So it's good that Greg is able to kind of mentor these guys and work them through this process that is new to him as well, and kind of channel all of that energy in a positive way, and really try to get the most out of every match. Because, I mean, in sports, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. You never know how long your career is going to be if something strange like, you know, a team potentially moving is going to pop out of nowhere. So, you know, make every game matter and take every game as if it's your last. And that seems to be the attitude these guys have, and it's shown in the results.
I think for what it's worth, this is getting far, far, far ahead of ourselves, myself at least. But, you know, if Greg Berhalter were to be able to add that that trophy, a supporter's shield, into his repertoire and his body of work with this team, obviously the last step would, you know, be getting an MLS Cup. But I think he would... Not that Columbus and Anthony Precourt or whoever, or MLS or whoever owned the team, wouldn't have every, you know, take every opportunity they could to extend him when his contract does come up, but I think he's really making a name for himself in MLS, and you can see how other teams and other players respect him. I think that, you know, there were the comments a couple weeks ago about, or you've heard the comments from Mike Grella or from Giassi Zardes and how he's kind of turned those careers around. There are comments from Romain Gall just talking about his time in Columbus, albeit short and anything but sweet, but still talking about Greg Berhalter's coaching style and what he's learned from him in glowing terms. Does Columbus, you know, maybe not appreciate what they've got with Berhalter and the degree of quality coach he is?
Well, and I think the other thing you have to throw into that, because I think he is rather underappreciated, is, you know, the finances that he's working with. Mm-hmm. You know, let's forget about the Austin stuff and Precourt and any sort of bias that leads. But this is still a smaller market team. You know, even at its best, you know, you're working with a smaller budget than maybe not every team in the league, but probably a good handful. You know, you're definitely not on the same level as an Atlanta, as a Toronto, as a Seattle, as an LA. And you look over the last, you know, four and now four plus years, and, you know, you as the Crew have been, you know, right there with those teams. I mean, the only teams the last 2 years that have more success than you, arguably, are Seattle and Toronto. Obviously, 2016 didn't go the way fans or the team wanted it to, but, you know, I think we can point to reasons for that, given the Kai stuff and people being hurt and whatnot. But every other year, this team's in the running for something at the end of the season. And not many teams can say that. You know, you look at other teams that, you know, are similarly financial, are in a similar financial place, and, you know, it's hit or miss every year what you're going to be able to do. And even look at a team like Atlanta, who originally wanted to play a similar type of soccer that the Crew play, and Tata Martino's talked about how he loves what Greg Berhalter's done with the system and whatnot. And, you know, Atlanta's giving up goals like crazy. I mean, it's, you know, it's like the early days of the Crew, where they just haven't been able to figure out how to not concede. And, you know, so I think what Greg's done has been pretty remarkable. You know, in 2014, you had a team that wasn't largely his players, even into 2015, that they kind of had to make do with and whatnot. And, you know, as he's been able to get more of his guys in, I think we're seeing the results. You know, if you don't have to offload Justin Merriman, Ola Kamara for other reasons this offseason, and you put them in there with the defensive effort that this team's had, you know, then you're talking about something really special, I think. So, yeah, I think Greg's done a great job. I think there's a reason he's being talked about as a potential national team manager. And, you know, Columbus should enjoy him while he's here, because, you know, other teams, national teams, stuff like that could come calling.
So this is kind of completely random, but if the Crew were to move to Austin, which I don't think is going to happen, but if it did and we ended up winning the Supporters Shield, does anybody know what would happen then? Because doesn't the Shield stay with the fans until the next season? Like, don't they actually take ownership of the Shield since they redesigned the Shield? I believe that's what happens, right?
I believe, yes. So the fans of the Supporter Shield winning team, well, not really the fans. I mean, so when we had the Supporter Shield the last time, it was in the cabin with the rest of the trophies. But yeah, if the team moves, that's a good question. I don't even know.
Like, would we just keep the team at Hendox for a year and then give it to New York City FC or whoever? I mean,
well, the Shield has been at Hendox before, so
that is
true. It's not unfamiliar
territory. That is true.
I think it's, you know, also kind of indicative of Berhalter and his success that MLS appears to be exploring a new rule change to basically try to even the playing field. I think, Alex, you've been following this a little bit too. It's a new, basically kind of like targeted allocation money or general allocation money, but it's special allocation money that would be used by teams to sign young players under the age of 20 from other countries, young international players, with the idea that they're players that you can go on and develop and then sell at a profit at a later point. They're supposedly looking at introducing this in time for the next transfer window in true MLS fashion, rolling out a new rule in the middle of this season. And you know, it's one of the direct references to it. A player that would fit that mold and prototype would be Milton Valenzuela. But, I mean, I think just in general, kind of to the point that you were making as well, Patrick, just Greg's ability to scout and find talent from such obscure places. But, you know, Alex, a pretty interesting development, very MLS.
Yeah, it's another kind of weird
Yes.
And we lost Alex.
Weird.
Very weird.
That's we were getting it was getting a little too close to home, so Dan Corder's march used his communications powers to cut us off. They silenced Alex, but they will not silence the rest of us.
Well, one thing with this new money, because Milton is on loan, you know, speaking about him, if the Crew, you know, I assume they will, you know, choose to buy him come the end of the year, this money can still be used towards him. You know, I know obviously he was the picture. I think it was Paul Tenorio who put this out there originally. But, you know, they had, you know, with him being on loan, they had to pay a loan fee. But if they want to acquire him on full, you know, full-time basis, they'll then have to pay a full transfer fee. And now this money can apply to that. So I know some people I saw on Twitter were like, well, this would have been nice to have in the off season when we were looking to get Milton. Well, that money will still be available for something like that, you know, in the future and whatnot, you know. And I think we've seen Greg is pretty good at finding these young guys, you know, aside from Milton. You know, you look at a guy like Artur from last year and whatnot, you know, even a Christian Martinez, who, while he took a little bit of time to develop, is turning into a player. So, you know, this is something that would definitely help a team like the Crew. Now, it might also, you know, you look at like Atlanta, they're signing young guys that you know, might also fall into this category. But I do think this benefits the Crew, and it looks like Alex is back.
Can you guys hear me?
We can.
I'm on my cell phone. My internet dropped. Yeah, Young Transfer Fund. Yeah, it's a very minor league soccer pool of money, unlike the other pools of money that are actually to make your team better. This is to make your team more like you are a Dutch second division team trying to sell young kids to pay your bills. So it's
Lions, something about selling Lions? Young kids to pay your bills just does not sound right.
I mentioned that it was a second division Dutch team beforehand, so you guys get the idea. But yeah, it's a very kind of strange decision to go with that. I'm not sure why they necessarily did it, but I hope it'll be good. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I think we're going to get a lot more use out of it than a lot of other teams will. Our scouting network seems better than a lot of these other teams. I'm not sure how, you know, a Montreal Impact is going to effectively use this, or, you know, certain teams like that. I'm going to be really interested to see what Atlanta does with that money. The whole thing, it'll be curious to see how it all plays out. This, again, seems like, I can't wait to see if this actually happens or not, but it seems like the kind of rule that they might push through just to try to, you know, get some team, some specific player. So that's something I'll be watching for, to see if one of these big Don Garber favorite teams signs some young kid that they wouldn't have been able to afford otherwise.
I was going to say something about Falcao going to Atlanta, but he's not young enough to be a young DP.
Yeah, maybe they can bend that rule a little bit, you know. I don't know how they'd be able to do that.
It's MLS. They can find a way. They will find a way.
Yep.
They will absolutely find a way. Do you think that I also look at this, and if I'm, you know, Newell's old boys, Arthur's the team that loaned him out, I look at, okay, if it's, you know, whatever the number's going to end up being, $3 million, and you know, when, if I know that the team I'm negotiating with has a special amount of money, you know, that they can just spend for this, I'm going to ask him for more money than, you know, he would have otherwise, especially when you're getting, you're going to see Milton after a full season and you know, presuming he continues to play at the same clip, that he's going to be, you know, you're looking at a proven MLS player, that this is just a chance, you know, good excuse for teams to jack up the prices for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. But I also wonder if that's the kind of thing that will happen that first year and then never again, mm-hmm. because nobody is going to know how much money any other team has, because it's all made up and fake and stupid. So I don't know if that'll end up happening, but that's kind of how I feel about Tam and Gam. Like, does anybody know how much Tam the crew have right now, or how much Gam the crew have right now? I don't. I try to follow this team pretty closely. I have no freaking clue. I know we got a bunch of it from Miram. I don't know how much we have left. Greg, I don't know how much we have from, like, other stuff. Yeah, Berhalter, no one else. Well, Greg, the one Berhalter, thing... Don Garber, and maybe Anthony Precourt, although I doubt it.
The one thing I think to keep in mind is that with most of these loans that they've done, especially with the young guys, usually they agree to some sort of fee from the beginning. Now, Artur was a little bit different, but it sounds like Milton's that way. And so, you know, that stuff tends to be set ahead of time. So you're not necessarily renegotiating with a team. But, yeah, I could, you know, potentially see that. Now, you also have to think, how closely is, you know, a Newell's old boys, or, you know, any team down on in South America, how closely are they paying attention to MLS rules and whatnot? You know, are they going to know that you know, young DP money is a thing, or, you know, whatnot? Potentially. I mean, you know, if they're keeping up with MLS transfers and whatnot, if they're doing business with MLS teams, I guess it would make sense to do. But yeah, I'm not sure how closely they all are following it.
Young DP just sounds like a rapper name.
Oh yeah, no, the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls. Those rapscallions have made that reference numerous times, and even produced, I believe they're called memes, from the internet, referencing that. I've never, you know, again, I have no direct familiarity with any of this, though. You know, moving on, looking a little bit elsewhere around the league, or specifically elsewhere around Columbus, and sticking with our good friends, Anthony Precourt, some developments over the past week and weekend in his bumbling effort to try to relocate this team, and appropriate kind of pushback, or counteraction, we'll call, by Save the Crew. Notably last week, you know, a couple developments. We had the release of the first ever artist rendering for a potential stadium at McCalla Place that has space for apparently 1,500 parking spaces, and then they're just a whole bunch of other options, because people will be able to walk or will be happy to walk 20 to 30 minutes in the Texas sun to watch this team, or they'll be able to perhaps catch a ride on the metro there in Austin using an optional station. But there was a little bit of a wrench in that one as well over the weekend Saturday. I don't know if anyone caught the news coming out from Richard Suttle, the head lobbyist for MLS to ATX, about moving or a station or building a station there on that McCalla Place site.
Yeah, that was funny. The stadium is going to be $200 million, supposedly. The train station that is kind of needed to prevent empty stadiums due to parking, I guess, will cost $13 million. And Precourt Sports Ventures is saying they will not be paying for that at all. So they also want the city to not only give them the free land, but also apparently pay for a lot of the infrastructure for this site. And yeah, I believe there's going to be about 1,000 parking spaces spread out over 3 lots. And they are assuring everyone that there are 10,000 parking spaces in addition to this within a 20-minute walk. So have no fear, friends. If you're in Austin and you don't get to be the 5% that actually get to park in the initial lot, it's still going to be okay, because all you have to do is hope that everybody has at least 2 people in their car, and then you will only have to walk 20 minutes in the 110-degree summer heat in Austin, Texas, each direction to get to the game. So everything's going great there. Everything's fine. It's just, amazing and dandy. And I know I personally would love to walk 20 minutes each direction in the middle of the summer in Austin, Texas, especially if I had young children or, someone in my family who was elderly or had, mm-hmm. Medical conditions that would cause problems. That sounds like a great solution. And it's a disaster down there. So another step on the road for the experts in soccer. So it's been a fun week.
It is. I think you are kind of getting to the bone of that, where you look at how just this is being, flying by the seat of their pants in coming up with all of these. This was supposedly a plan, and instead it's a picture. And I think, I think there's a lot of people down there that think, hey, this is a site that isn't being used for anything. This is, there's a reason people like the Austin Chamber and stuff have gotten on board with this. Development, growth, hooray. But it's also a sign of, what happens when you don't, or what can happen if you don't think about the growth that you're doing and the development that you're doing, things strategically. If I'm Austin, don't forget, they're getting a soccer team next year regardless, in the form of a USL franchise that already has a stadium site that it doesn't cost taxpayer money, that's more accessible. Or are you going to give over a community asset? I say that kind of with, air quotes, because it's some land that, isn't really developed or anything like that, and there aren't a whole bunch of people trying to purchase it, and then, be forced to care, pay the rest of the cost for this to try to make, fit this round peg in a square hole, just because that's what Anthony Precourt and Dave Greeley and Richard Suttle are asking you to do.
Well, and not only that, I mean, when you look at all of the stuff that's going on there, they have to decide this in 3 weeks. I mean, they literally have to make a decision on this in less than a month. So it's insane. It's completely insane. And the PSV people are now saying, oh, well, we'll do a traffic study on all of this. Don't worry. We're going to make sure that all of this is going to be okay, that it's not going to ruin the neighborhoods for people who have been living there forever. It's not going to cause a total traffic jam, even though there are already traffic jams everywhere around this area. It's not going to make life a living hell for all of the people who live and reside in this community. But we'll only do that study after you already sign a blank check to us saying, yeah, you can move the team here and we'll pay for, all this crap. And we don't know how much crap that is because we haven't done the study yet, but just tell us that you'll pay for it and then we'll do the study. And they expect Austin to go along with that. So very, very fun, very, very interesting. It would not shock me in the slightest if the city came back and said, yeah, we're going to need to see that traffic study before we say anything about this. And that would throw Precourt's whole timetable off, not to mention the crap that's going on in kind of the Ohio legal system right now. But just purely looking at Austin, ignoring Columbus, it is a disaster down there. It is not going the way Precourt wants it to go at all, at basically any level. they can still get it done, but geez, Louise, I mean, it has been a process, and pretty funny to watch from the outside.
What's the over under on him actually following through with his ultimatum of the end of June and not extending it further?
Oh, absolutely does. This is, you know, MLS. It's, remember when we were going to have expansion teams announced like 2 months ago?
I totally forgot about that.
you've got all those. I think it's, you know, it's a pretty stark contrast to see what they've done or what they haven't done more specifically down there. When you know how long Dave Greeley's been down there, we've got the, when you know how long Richard Suttle's been down there talking with Austin City Council members, we've got the papers. And then in contrast, this Save the Crew movement, a couple of significant developments there. The announcement of the 2019 initiative 2019, where they are securing pledges to purchase tickets, season tickets, partial game tickets from fans with the caveat that is, you know, I will pledge to purchase these tickets once the team has local ownership. And then you also see, to a lesser degree, Save the Crew occupying the place in the community that the Crew would otherwise be expected to occupy, whether that is the, you know, Taco Fest that we saw this weekend, or some of the other, you know, clinics that they've hosted or things like that. It's very stark to see the contrast between how well run this one effort is, Save the Crew, and versus just how bumbling and slapshot the PSV's efforts have been this entire time.
Had Save the Crew been around for Goal 10K, maybe we would have had 10,000 season tickets. I know the Hunts would have probably still sold, but, you know, could you imagine the difference? But I'm really hoping that Austin City Council is paying attention. I know they got other stuff on their hands, but they're paying attention, at least even marginally, to how PSV is working and how the fans here in Columbus, or I'd say the community here in Columbus, is working. They should know who to go in business with and who not to go in business with. And that's definitely not... Precourt Sports Ventures is bad as businessing, whether it's Greeley or Precourt. Mm-hmm. And that might be a banner that flies somewhere that says you're bad at businessing.
Well, and I mean, I just still can't get over the fact that had Precourt decided to kind of put an ultimatum out there instead of doing all this behind everybody's back in sometime during the summer and said, hey, Columbus City Council, I need a stadium in 6 months or I got to go. You know, we need to find some sort of a solution here. I want to stay here, but we need to find a better solution going forward. Help me out. Fans, help me out. The fans would have been doing all the same crap for him that he could be benefiting from. And we would have got it done. And the whole team would have been in a better spot. He would have been in a better spot than he's going to be in McCalla Place if that even gets done. And it's just such a waste. And, you know, it speaks to the kind of inept business model that they were trying to follow. I think Precourt legitimately thought that they would walk down there and that Austin would hand over prime parkland with a great view of the downtown to them for free, and they could just build their little, you know, stadium on top of there, and everything would be easy. But, you know, that's not how it works, and, you know, you're not the Yankees, Mr. Precourt. So, you know, at a certain point, you have to kind of accept that this is not going your way and, you know, get out of the way of progress. You know, the Crew are going to be saved, and we're going to be better for all of this happening. And I think that's what Crew fans should keep in mind, that when all this is said and done, Save the Crew is going to win, and we are going to have local ownership that is going to try to bring this team to the top of the league the way, you know, the local ownership in Kansas City turned that team around. And the future is going to be so bright. I can't wait.
But Alex, he had his bachelor party down in Austin. Come on!
Yeah.
And he has ambition.
Well, and I mean, this is something that's been really interesting. And I was talking to a couple people about this not too long ago. You know, Precourt is trying to have two things that, well, two realities at the same time. He goes to Columbus, or, you know, sources in Columbus will kind of say on his behalf that, oh, I tried everything in Columbus. There's no way that I could have, you know, done any more in Columbus. It was the business metrics that let Columbus down. It was, you know, fans not buying enough season tickets and businesses not doing enough sponsorship deals and blah, blah, blah. I tried everything. It's the city's fault, I swear. And then he's got this other reality when he goes to Austin, which is, I have wanted this for years. I have wanted to put a team here for as long as I have known about soccer. I have wanted a team in Austin since
before MLS existed.
Yeah. I have wanted to put a team here. And those two things cannot both be true. So which one is the lie? Is it that you wanted?
I've got an idea. They're both lies.
They could very well be both lies. But I mean, this idea that he has either wanted Austin all this time, which is what he tells the people in Austin, because that's what the people in Austin want to hear. And then he says what he feels he has to say to the people in Columbus so that he doesn't feel bad about the decision he's making. I think a lot of that is why he says what he says. I think on some level, Anthony Precourt knows he's trying to hurt a lot of people for money for himself. And I think he feels bad about that. But Anthony Precourt, if you're listening to this, and I know you're not, there's still time to do the right thing. You can still get out of the way and, you know, step aside and go take your money and do whatever you want with it. Just let us keep our team here. You can put another team in Austin. Nobody's going to care. But get out of the way. You know, let's save the crew, and let's get on with our lives, and let's just end this nightmare that you've kind of created for everyone, that the league has created for everyone. And let's just move forward together in a positive way.
Well, Alex, you talked about, you know, kind of the role model or the blueprint for a franchise that, you know, maybe struggled but then had a rebirth with new local ownership, Sporting Kansas City. Rebranded, of course, under the new ownership from the Kansas City Wizards, although, you know, we're going to have a little bit of a throwback this weekend. I believe they're going to be wearing those original Kansas City Wizard uniforms, those white, bright ones with the rainbow sleeves. It'll be a fun game, but also a great test for this Columbus team. We mentioned and we've talked about how this stretch, starting off with New England, we're going to be, you know, teams that are higher up in the standings. SKC, you know, always seems like they're one of the dominant teams in the West, one of the more stalwart defensive teams, and they're right now find themselves top of the Western Conference standing. So this will be a challenge, I think, no small challenge for Columbus Crew if they expect to keep this shutout streak and unbeaten streak alive in Kansas City.
Absolutely. You know, this is, you know, New England was, I think, a step up in competition. You know, you went from playing some teams below the playoff line to finally playing a team above the playoff line. And then now you get a team that, you know, is tied with you on points, I believe, at 24, is, you know, as you mentioned, the top of the Western Conference. And I think this will be arguably the most difficult game they've had all season. You know, you could make the argument, I guess, Toronto, but given the Champions League stuff that they were focused on, I think this will be more difficult. You know, I don't think Kansas City's offense is as prolific as it has been in years past, given that they don't have Dom Dwyer anymore and whatnot. But, you know, a team that just plays well together, you know, has taken advantage of opportunities and whatnot. So, plus, it's never easy to go to Kansas City. You know, that's a raucous atmosphere there. You know, a Sunday evening game, I'm sure they'll be ready for it. And nationally televised too, which is, you know, something we don't see very often around these parts. But yeah, I think this is a tricky one. You know, you're also altering your practice schedule a little bit this week because the game's on Sunday. And so, you know, while that shouldn't make too much of an impact, I think anytime you change something up a little bit, you're not sure how the team will respond, how bodies will respond, stuff like that. So yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm very intrigued with this match and seeing how this team, you know, kind of handles the step up in competition.
I want to have us, you know, break down the actual kind of game a little bit more, but I also want to elaborate on a point that you made there, Patrick, about this being the first nationally televised game, kind of loop it back a little bit to Save the Crew quickly to get your guys' thoughts. We saw last week in New England in Foxborough, there it appeared that the New England fans began chanting Save the Crew, I believe in the 23rd minute. I'm assuming that's because of, you know, 23 years with the team. Here in Columbus, we've seen other supporters that have kind of voiced some Save the Crew stuff. You saw the New England capo had some Save the Crew on his t-shirt and on their capo stand. Do we think that we'll see anything here or hear anything in this nationally televised game? One of just two, Columbus is going to be part of this season. In Kansas City, they've got a very strong raucous supporters culture. Do you think that MLS is going to try to clamp down in this national team or game?
I don't think MLS clamps down. I mean, there's not. What are they going to clamp down on? If this was like in its infancy, nobody would have. They could have clamped down and nobody would have caught wind of what's going on and they could have stifled it. But no, this is. I mean, for crying out loud, yes, our games might not be televised nationally most of the time, but guess what? They are accessible to everybody online via ESPN Plus or, you know, whatever. And there are, if I'm not mistaken, at least two Save the Crew banners in the corner in the Nordic, which is so shown quite a bit. So, you know, whatever. I don't think MLS clamps down. I don't think they can. I think that's production up to ESPN, and they might say something about it, but I don't think at this point ESPN cares, because guess what? If this whole Save the Crew thing succeeds, ESPN has another, what, 30 on 34-30 mm-hmm. that they can put out, or some sort of documentary or something that they're going to need all the footage they can out of it.
This game's on Fox, just FYI.
Whatever. Fox they need Sports footage. They need footage. So, I know. I mean,
don't want people confused on Sunday when they go to watch the game. But Sam said ESPN.
Yes, like anybody actually listens to me.
I get my news from the Massive Report podcast, God damn it.
Let's be honest, 99% of the people listening to this show have already tuned out by now, so it's okay.
Yeah. Hi, Mom. You know, looking back, we've got this SKC team, you know, bringing it back to the actual game. On Sunday, you know, a team coming off a 1-1 draw against Minnesota. They've been getting strong defensive performances as they're wont to do from their back line and, of course, their goalkeeper, Tim Miela. But, you know, this is a Columbus team. This looks like a game, you know, that could be in line for another, you know, 1-0, you know, looking like it's going to be a scoreless draw game for a little bit. Or do you think that, you know, this is a Columbus team where, you know, at some point it breaks, the dam breaks, whether it's on the back end and the goals start getting allowed, or whether they start putting some more balls in the net?
I think this has to be a game. You know, I think this has to be a better performance than what you saw even in New England. And then I mean that more so on the offensive side. You know, like I said, I don't think Kansas City's a great offensive team, but they are good enough defensively to hold Columbus scoreless. And I think at home, you know, you expect them to create some good chances and potentially score. So it'll be a test for, you know, the Columbus backline, another test. But yeah, I think you need the offense to sort of come alive this week. You know, I think potentially with you know, you would imagine Mike Grella is able to get the start this week. Obviously, playing on grass, only played 20 some minutes, I believe, last week. You know, so he, assuming everything goes fine training wise this week, I imagine you get to see him from the start, which is always going to help offensively. But yeah, a guy like Giassi Zardes needs to be involved. You know, Federico Higuain, I think, needs to be involved. They need to be on the ball, trying to create chances, as you expect from this team. Just more of the kind of older style. You know, obviously, you don't want to give away too much. You don't want to risk putting this back line, which you've built so much confidence in, you know, kind of a setback. But I do think if you're going to get out of Kansas City with something, I think it needs to be a little more onus on the offense to show up and get the job done this week.
Oh, well, we will see. We'll be getting picks to see if we think they will be at the job in this week. But first, we want to quick give a plug again to our great sponsors at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, a good place to watch this game here this weekend on, you know, near said dope porch. Of course, it's holiday weekend, so you can enjoy some of the delicious adult beverages they have, maybe a little bit more than you otherwise would on a Sunday. Make sure to hit them up or head up to oldnortharcade.com for more information. Now let's get some picks in. We'll start with you, Patrick Murphy.
I picked against the Crew last week. And, well, actually, I think I picked them to tie last week, and they won. So
I was the only one that picked them to win.
Yeah. I'm going to go 2-1 Kansas City. I think going to Kansas City is tough. I think both teams probably play well. I think we leave that – we come into the podcast next week, you know, talking about how it was a bit of a disappointing result, but that the performance was something that, you know, didn't leave us too discouraged. But I think Kansas City gets them this week.
Patrick Murphy already giving you reasons not to tune in next week. Sam Fahmy, let's give him a reason to tune in.
I'm slightly more optimistic than Murph. So I think that they go to Kansas City, which has not been the worst places like Toyota Park in Chicago or, you know, Gillette
Bridgeview.
Stadium or Bridgeview. Yeah. But I think Kansas City's a pretty good team, and if they can go, I mean, a good indication of what the next few games are going to look like is if they can go to Kansas City and get a result. And by get a result, I mean at least come out with a point. So I'm going to go once again for I think I went 2-2 tie last week. I'll go 2-2 tie again against Kansas City.
2-2 tie from Sam Fahmy. Alex, what you got?
Cavs in 7. Oh, the
6.
Soccer. I think it's going to be 7. But in terms of the game, the Crew game, every time I have predicted a draw, they have won. So I'm going to continue that streak and pick 2-2.
All right. And I'm going to continue my streak. Every time the Crew have won, I've picked them to win. And I will again pick them to win this game. I'm going to go with a 2-0 win. Crew tie the, I think, is it? The MLS record for consecutive clean sheets is 5, or there. I saw that number somewhere or some prominence. Record. Okay, Crew record. Regardless, they do that. Keep those sheets so clean for Zach Steffen. He's just so clean. And when he gets tucked in at night, and we get a goal from Giassi Zardes, and we'll throw one in from Christian Martinez, who will get back in the lineup after seeing the bench in favor of Argudo and Nico Hansen. That should about do it for this week, unless any other parting thoughts from our distinguished panel.
Go Cavs, save the Crew.
Hell yeah. All right, well, that'll do it. And so for the rest of our guests, we'll see you next week. Bye, buddies.